This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It is episode... I think it's 411. I think I need to keep track of this these days. Because 416 is coming up. It's coming up. Which is the 8 years worth of podcast. I think I've talked to my beloved wife about that, but I haven't necessarily talked to the kids about it, the grandkids and all that kind of stuff. And I think we're also going to try to get Amber in on this deal. So I need to talk to her about it too, and we need to do it at a time when she can be there. So we got to get that all figured out. Maybe we'll try to do it like on a Thursday afternoon when I get home. Anyways, everything is puttering along, just writing and writing and writing, you know, trying to get through the big crisis at the end of the current book and get things resolved and have a nice ending on it. Still working out the details, still a little bit in the fog, but I've got the general gist of where we're going and how we're ending up and kinda how we're getting started on the next one. So we're getting there. You know, I'm right on the cusp of one of these emotional moments that I like to put in my books. And frankly, I'm trying to decide how many people are gonna die. Or who's gonna die? That's what I'm trying to decide. I've just gotta write it out. I don't want to become too predictable. And the fact of the matter is, if I kill everybody off, people will go, "Oh, you're always killing people." So I'm just tempted not to kill anybody off this time. But we'll see. We'll see. People have to die. We'll see. Anyways, sorry for the lips back there. So that's all going fine. Work's all going fine. We are now in that time of life where we are moving forward every day, waiting to see what the next day will hold with respect to Lynette's father. He is home. He is under hospice care at this point, and he's pretty much getting weaker every day. And so we're just taking this step at a time, day at a time. Obviously, this is a big deal for my wife, and so I'm doing my best to just be supportive and helpful any way that I can with whatever they need in terms of setting up electronics and those kind of things. So, you know, we're moving forward. Everyone's in good spirits. Everyone knows what's coming. So... funeral's all been planned out, step at a time. This is not a new topic that I have to talk about this week. I think last week maybe I said that I was going to talk about Naomi Judd, but I came across this and I thought, you know, this is so interesting. And it really fits in with all of the ruckus that is going on currently in the world. And some things occurred to me this week with all of the ruckus that was going on in the world. And I watched some videos and they pretty much agreed with me, so... So since they agree with me, I'm going to talk about them. I've been listening more and more to little short video clips from Prager University, Prager U on YouTube. They have some interesting things. They do a good job of explaining some things and going through the list of things and, you know, trying to examine different viewpoints and things.
Excuse me.
One of the latest ones they put up was by a guy, and it was why I left the left. You know, obviously Prager University is conservative, but they have a lot of interesting viewpoints, and I enjoy interesting viewpoints, so I am more than happy to listen. Just a second. This is my buddy. Hold on a minute. I'll be right back. Okay, so that was my beloved son-in-law and my pastor. So, you know, you got to respond. When he calls, you got to respond. In the eyes of God. Anyway, so, you know, I've been listening to some PragerU stuff, and they just put out, no, this isn't. This was a couple of years ago they put this out. But it's a good one. It's a good one. It's called Does Free Speech Offend You? I sure hope that I haven't talked about this before. Because now I'm having a twinge like I have talked about this before, but I have other information. But anyways, does free speech offend you? It's YouTube. It's only like 4 minutes long. It's really good. But I was watching another couple of videos in conjunction with this. So anyways, and this guy just kind of talks about what's going on. And he starts with what I think is an agreeable premise in America, at least it used to be, that freedom of speech, this ability for us to express ourselves, is a cherished ideal and it's a basic human right. However, prior to Trump, we were sliding down a slope where we were in danger of losing freedom of speech. We really were. Because I was just telling a buddy about a lady that she just tweets this thing about not getting AIDS in Africa and it's not a problem because she's not white. Okay, well, that's probably a dumb thing to say. But she just gets excoriated in social media. I mean, just, she loses her job, she gets death threats, it's just completely out of scope. It is escalation, and we all know where escalation comes from. It's just crazy, the kind of stuff that's going on. You know, and what we're moving into, or what we were moving into, I think a lot of things are going to be very different in 4 years. What we were moving into was a sensitivity-based censorship, where anything that could be interpreted as hateful or hurtful has to be suppressed in the name of political correctness. And in this video that we're talking about, how college and universities, they've put into place highly restrictive speech codes. The guy who was talking has the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, which spells FIRE! Which they worked on that one for a little while, so it would spell FIRE! So they did a poll, and they found that 54% of public and 59% of private institutions impose politically correct speech codes on students. And he said, thanks to recent Department of Education guidelines, that may be 100% in coming years. And he gave some examples. He said, so how bad is it? He says, well, in California, in 2013, on Constitution Day, a decorated veteran was told that he could not hand out copies of the Constitution. Same day, another student was told he could not protest surveillance of the government as it was exposed by Edward Snowden. He could not protest that outside of their tiny little free speech zone. Same thing happened in Hawaii. When people wanted to protest all the surveillance that's going on by the government, they couldn't. Why couldn't they? Well, because that might trigger some people and might feel them anxious, and so we don't want to do anything that might upset people. Okay, fine. Along the same time, you start getting going on this idea of disinvitations. That universities don't want to invite anyone besides those of very specific viewpoints, because if they do, the students will protest that it needs to be that person needs to be disinvited. Now, you may have said, wait a minute, I thought they weren't supposed to protest except in free speech zones. You're only supposed to protest in free speech zones, apparently, if you are a certain viewpoint. If you want to disinvite somebody, I guess those rules don't apply. And I think we all saw the Berkeley riots and things. This was disinvitation. They didn't, how dare this person come to talk to them about another viewpoint. Okay, and this just goes hand in hand with trigger warnings. I'm sure you've heard about trigger warnings. He gave an example of the fact that in 2014, a student requested that trigger warnings be put on the novel The Great Gatsby because they, quote, possessed a variety of scenes that reference abusive, misogynistic violence. In other words, we have to be really, really careful about everything that someone might be reading, everything that someone might be exposed to, and they've got to be warned because, you know, if they see something that upsets them, that is obviously, objectively, morally wrong for them to be upset. You know, this is not quite the pattern that I was raised with. Just this week, I was quoting to a friend the whole thing about sticks and stones may break your bones and words can never hurt me. He also said on the video that Oberlin College, you know, was trying to make its classrooms safe, and they defined safety, or this guy who was giving the talk defined safety as means the right to always feel comfortable. He even said there are popular academic theories which encourage students to scrutinize speech for microaggressions. Microaggressions. It's any statement that might be construed as racially insensitive, classist, sexist, or otherwise un-PC. Students on some college campuses are being taught to police this. Now, according to the guy who gave this little PragerU speech, as far as he's concerned, this is exactly the opposite of what we need. He said our society needs candor. We need freedom of speech, not freedom from speech. Intellectual comfort is not a right. If we want freedom of speech and the freedom to survive. So that's pretty interesting. I happened to come across another video that was talking about microaggressions, where this guy went onto a college campus and he started to interview people about microaggressions. It was so fascinating, because a microaggression might be if you ask someone who is Asian, where were you born? Well, that obviously might be construed that you're, you know, asking whether I'm a real American or not. And that would upset me if people asked me that. So, you know, you shouldn't ask me where I was born. Okay, all right. Doesn't matter whether you intended to upset me or not. You know, phrases like saying all lives matter. Obviously, that's I don't even think qualifies as a microaggression. That's a macroaggression there. Because you're saying that against Black Lives Matter. They had a bunch of other ones that, you know, on the surface, after you heard them, you were like, okay, well, maybe, okay. I could see how if somebody was working hard, they might misconstrue what you were saying there. And Yeah, if they were easily offended, they could be offended by that. But that's just the point with microaggressions. That is the point. Might someone be easily offended by me saying this? And if so, then I really need to make sure that we're going to expunge that from people's vocabularies. What was very, very interesting. I'm watching this video and going, yep, that's what I'd expect, yep. What was very interesting about this is he's on a college campus, so he's talking to a variety of people. But the big true dividing line on this was male and female. He was talking to the guys, and the guys were like, maybe that one could be, I suppose, he's going through all this stuff. All these guys are just like, just not sure, but okay, they're willing to kind of go along with it if it gets identified. He's talking about them. Well, they're going to make a database, you know, and the database is going to have everything in it to determine whether or not these are microaggressions. And the guys are going, okay, yeah, that'd probably be okay. Amazingly enough, I think to a person, all the women that he interviewed, that he showed. Now, you know, I'm sure he didn't show everybody. This may be completely biased and unbalanced, blah, 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 blah. But for the purposes of the video, every single one of the women that he interviewed, they were all like, well, yeah, that's a microaggression. Well, yeah, that's microaggression. Absolutely. I think we do need a database. We need to monitor these things. Like, okay, all right. Interestingly enough, I think in a sign... I'm backing into my garage. I think in a sign that PragerU has reached a certain cachet, George Will just did a really good PragerU talk on the politically correctness and on how... Yeah, there's the neighbor dog barking again. And it was really good. Hold on a minute. I have to shoo the neighbor dog and the cat out of my garage. Out. Go. Out. Sorry. Be right back. Out. Out. No. Stay. Out. Stop. No. It was really good because he was going through all the inconsistencies, how the Washington Post has been just up in arms, apparently, about the Washington Redskins, that they needed to change their name because it was so terrible and it was so racist. And George Will was saying, well, why don't you change the name of your newspaper then, because it was named after George Washington. And he started going down the imperfections that George Washington had, and how can you promote someone who had slaves and who was this and that? And he started going through all the other things that reflect religion and all that. You know, and he was basically talking about this whole politically correct speech. And I got thinking about that in the context of everything that's going on. And I mentioned last week or the week before last that there was a Democratic strategist who came out and said, yeah, you know, probably one of the reasons that we had trouble in this election, the reason that Trump won, is that people were tired of political correctness, you know, and they were tired of this stuff. And I got to thinking about Trump, and he is probably the most un-PC guy who's ever been elected. And then I got to thinking about this whole balance between lust and fear. And I got to thinking about how lust always works things out in action, because for a man, the final goal of his lust is action. He can think about it all day long. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't get him to a goal. There has to be an action in the physical world. But to deal with fear, those who are encumbered by fear, whether they are male or female, those who are encumbered by fear, really, it doesn't have to be an action. It can simply be thoughts. Anything that can soothe me, anything that can bring me comfort can push down those fear. And while lust seeks, pushes us to look outside of ourselves to seek a tool that we can use for that act, fear oftentimes works in a similar way. We're looking outside ourselves to solve the problems, to be calmed, but it's really mental. It's not action so much as it is how I'm thinking, and how I'm thinking is influenced on the outside by other people's actions, but not necessarily my actions. But it's by the words. It's by the looks. It's by the things that can be said afar to me and make me feel small and make me feel hated. And that difference started really fascinating me, because in the whole politically correct movement, it's almost becoming that what you say is just as important, if not more important, than what you do. And because of that, the politically correct movement, at least for me, has very much something that is flavored from a foundation of fear. And what's fascinating to me is that we have a president now who it's really hard to... to take serious many of the things that he says. But we have people that are just going apoplectic over the things that he says. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if he knows that and he just says it to make them apoplectic. You know, that's his style of leadership. Let's just say a bunch of stuff and get people mad and upset. And then we'll go do what we're going to go do. So this is a really fascinating clash when you look at a philosophy that is trying to espouse politically correct speech, is trying to espouse the need and demand for trigger warnings, is trying to espouse that we should create a database of trigger words and a database of microaggressions so that everyone can be taught and their brains and their thoughts can be controlled so that they never say any of these things. You've got that whole movement. And then you've got this guy on the other side in his cohorts that just, like, say stuff off the cuff. And it's what a fascinating time to be alive, to see this. And some of the things that I've got friends who are liberals, and some of the things I read, I mean, I have friends who are absolutely, absolutely convinced. They are convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that because 7 countries had a 90-day ban put on them so that the vetting processes could be reevaluated, they are convinced that they are one step away from the chain-link fences being set up in America, and everybody who disagrees with Trump, they're going to call out the army, they're going to herd us up, they're going to put us into there, and then it's going to be the gas chambers. I mean, they are convinced that immigration ban is just the first step, and it's all going to go downhill from there. We call that escalation. So, you know, it's just very interesting to watch one of my friends who posted that kind of stuff, she had posted this big long list. I may have mentioned it. And so about how they're going to deal with this and how they're going to resist. And okay, that's fine. It's America, free speech, do whatever you want. Down at the bottom, she added another one. And she said, I'll add one of my own. Every day, do something kind for someone who doesn't look like you. And I thinks to myself when I read that, I really like that last one. Because every opportunity I get, I like to do something fun and kind for someone else. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.